Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarney, and with me is a man who, after months of negotiation, is now tied down to a new multi-year, multi-podcast deal. He's ours. He's not yours. He's going nowhere else. It's Steve Lillis. How are you, Steve?
Dev, all the better for signing my multi-year rolling contract.
Now, I'm aware that that was a complete lie about the multi-podcast deal, but if you could just keep doing them, that would be really good.
I'm here every week. You know it. You know where to find me. Right next to you, sitting on your lap almost.
Yes. Oh, well, maybe not so much. But you've got a slightly deeper voice this week. Talk me through it, Steve.
I've been laid up for a couple of days of a chest infection, so don't get too close to me.
Goodness me. But I bet you're treating Mrs. Lillis to a little bit of Barry White here and there, aren't you? Singing her to sleep.
My first, my last, my everything.
My man. Now, first things first, before we even get into the show, I need to get your take on the Frank Warren, Tyson Fury, ESPN, Top Rank axis, which has emerged this week. What do you think of it all?
Hey, it's fantastic for boxing. Best of all for Tyson. It's going to secure his future forever and make him a very wealthy man. And that's what is the great thing about boxing, as well as the titles, the rewards it can bring. So I'm delighted for him, and great work there by Frank Warren pulling that deal together. And I tell you what, there's very few secrets in boxing, but there was a couple this week that were kept secret, I'm telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's what Frank Warren said at a press conference that he held earlier on this week, which had several announcements, and one of them was this new deal with ESPN and Tyson Fury.
Tyson Fury and Queensbury have signed a long-term deal with ESPN. They will be Tyson's exclusive broadcasters in the States. They have a platform of just nearly 3 million subscribers on ESPN Plus and ESPN. This is going to be something special for Tyson. It gives him a chance to become the guy that you want to fight now. We've not got to go like he had to go to Germany to fight Klitschko, like he had to go to fight Wilder on Showtime. That no longer happens. We have the biggest platform for him to be on, and that means he is in a tremendous position as far as a boxer's concerned, and it's a fabulous deal for him. ESPN and BT combined, with what we're doing with both these, you know, with both the broadcasters, these guys are in a great position, and Tyson's in a fantastic position. He will get all what he wants, which is to be the guy. You know, he's the lineal champion. He's the blue corner. He's not the red corner. That's what he's going to be. He's the blue corner now. You look at the social media, most people think he's the number one heavyweight out there. He's the heavyweight that steps up to the plate. He's done it. He goes to the other guy's backyard. He can't do no more than he does. And he's getting the respect from the public, certainly from the British public. And also, it must be said, from the Americans now, because ESPN have gone and put themselves, you know, on the block here. They've said, we want this guy. This is the guy we want to get behind. So, as I say, two great broadcasters, BT pushing out the boat here, and also in the States, he's in a fantastic position, where he should be, because he is the number one lineal champion. He's the lineal champion. And it's not a belt, as some promoters said. There's not a lineal belt. It's the guy that, from history, he's the guy that beat the guy that beat the guy that beat the guy. That's what he is. He's the number one.
Well, hopefully we hear an announcement on Tyson Fury's next move very soon. Aside from that, we've got a bit of Billy Joe Saunders this week. We've got a bit of Jack Cattrall, a bit of Sonny Edwards, and actually, we've got a new signing of Frank Warren's on the show as well, middleweight banger Denzel Bentley. So keep that guard up, because for the next hour, we're going to be throwing some hooks and jabs your way. It's the Boxing Podcast. Now, as part of Frank Warren's monster press conference at the BT Sports studio earlier in the week, there was the announcement that former WBO World Middleweight Champion Billy Joe Saunders would be stepping up in weight to challenge for the vacant WBO World Super Middleweight title. Steve Lillis got him on the end of a blower.
Bill, first of all, the move to Super Middleweight, it was a big surprise to people, pretty much as Tyson Fury's surprise was the other day.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. You can't turn these opportunities down. You know, you've got to give it all. And I think you just got to go with the flow. Like I said, if they offered me a world title fight heavyweight, I think I would consider.
Yeah, well, you're a fighting man, aren't you? So.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of them. A lot of people surprised with the move. I'm just, you know, obviously I'm a big gut about the middleweight title, but that will come the minute Golovkin and any, you know, they're in strong talks of making. So if I win this title, I can then move back down for a mandatory position.
All right, so you could move back quite easily, you think, weight-wise, as long as I don't think you'd want to stay at 12 stone for too long, though. Otherwise, it would be harder to get the weight off, wouldn't it?
I reckon I'm a natural middleweight anyway, so there's not a big difference to me, but it's certainly giving me more options. I can move up and down from 160 to 168, so it's all good with me.
And the opponent, Shifat Issoufi, you described as a fat heavyweight previously. What else do you know from him about him apart from that, Bill?
You know, he's been in some good camps, Andre Ward's camps, and been sparring with some big names, etc. So, you know, he's got the experience, he's a good puncher, but, you know, in my eyes, a good boxer will always be a good fighter.
Super middleweight also, there would also be massive fights for you there. What about the winner of Eubank de Gaulle? Would that be something you'll be open to?
Most definitely, that's the big fight. You know, I've been fired to get the job, and we can sit down and have a discussion and get things together. I mean, you know, Frank Warren's done a brilliant job, and then TK for looking me in this fight. So, you know, I'll be happy to leave them to negotiate and see what we can make of it.
Who do you think will win the fight on Saturday night?
I think the girl will have a bit too much, I think.
Really? You think he's still fresh enough?
I reckon so.
Yeah, how do you see it unfolding, that fight?
Just as long as the girl's got the life left in him, then I think that the girl will point to victory.
Who would you prefer to fight out of either of them? If it was a draw Saturday and someone said there's this much for him, this much for him, and you was happy with the purse of both fighters, who would you take first and why?
I think I'd take Miguel because the simple fact is I've beaten you, mate. And I want to, you know, serve a test. I would choose Miguel.
Do you think Eubank still wakes up every morning and thinks of you?
I think he dreams about me, yeah. 100%.
And up there in Sheffield, how's it going with everyone up there with Dom and the boys?
Yeah, it's all going good. Camp's going good. We're all in the zone, so, you know, we've all got big fights coming up. So, you know, we're all pushing each other on. That's all you can ask for, really. And it's all going well. That's the way things are going.
Come on. And when you talk a lot about last year being a wasted year, Bill, and yet you have had it. You've had inactivity. But you've been boxing at a high level for a long time, way before the 2008 Olympics. You're only 29. How much longer do you see yourself doing this for?
Yeah, I think I've got longevity in the sport. I think that's, it's down to me. I'm not one of these fighters that take punishment. I never drink. So, you know, it's hardly my food I love. So I've got longevity in the sport. So I reckon I could be around until I'm 31.
Yeah, I mean, that's only another couple of years. So you've got a lot to cram in 2 years, haven't you? Do you still love boxing as much as you did as a kid?
I think it comes more of a business, but boxing is a funny sport. It's like a woman, you fall in love with it, you fall out of love with it. You know, people can fall in and out of love with boxing, but at the minute, I'm definitely, most definitely in love with boxing, yeah, again.
And where would you like to be at the end of 2019, Bill? So you want two more world title fights after the challenge in April at Wembley?
That's the idea, yeah. That's what I love.
So, Steve, Billy Joe Saunders is in a position to grab a vacant title at £168. He normally fights at £160. So he's taking this fight instead of the Andrade fight. Good move or bad move? What do you make of it all?
it's a good move for him. People can say what they want about, you know, Billy Joe and moving up to super middleweight, but it's the chance to become a genuine two-weight world champion, whatever you want to say. So that for him is fantastic. And he's also, you know, he's not the biggest super middleweight, so he can also move back down to 160. And once you, well, I think with the WBO, you win a world title at one weight. If you want to go into another weight, you can go in automatically as the mandatory. So that fight's still there. And, you know, there's other fights for him, you know, in 168, certainly, you know, James DeGale and Chris Eubank, which he touched on there.
Yeah, he mentioned that. And obviously there's also Callum Smith. You know, I don't know if promotional divides will get in the way of that, if that is such a thing for this fight, but that would be a big fight.
That would be a big fight, but there's one about the Callum Smith fight. Callum Smith, there's talk of him moving to light heavy right now, and he is absolutely huge at the weight. I just don't think that is the direction they would go in from Billy Joe Saunders' side. He's a monster at the weight. And, you know, and with Billy, he's new into the weight, growing into it. You know, and it takes you 18 months to grow into a weight. I'd be surprised if that fight happens. I think if he stayed at 168, he'd be looking at the winner of Saturday's fight at the O2 between James DeGale and Chris Eubank.
Yeah, that feels like the fight to make for me, especially Eubank. For me, if Eubank comes through that and, you know, puts on a great performance, that makes that rematch, which has been years in the making, mouth-watering. What do you reckon?
It does, but it's also, as Billy said, he'd rather fight DeGale because, yeah, you know, he's never boxed him. But the money fight is him against Eubank rematch. If, you know, if Chris looks impressive this weekend, him against Saunders at 168 is an absolute natural to make.
Well, I'm sure an announcement will be made very soon on when tickets will go on sale for that. It's April 13th. It's at the SSE Arena, Wembley. And it's Billy Joe Saunders against Shefat Issoufi for the vacant WBO World Super Middleweight title. 23-0 super lightweight Jack Catterall is a man in a great position. He's beaten every man put in front of him, including the likes of Ahara Davis and Tyrone McKenna. He's number one with the WBO and at the front of the queue for a shot at Maurice Hooker's world title. Steve Lillis gave him a call just to see how he's getting on.
Jack, we're still early into 2019 and you're mandatory contender for Maurice Hooker's WBO title. Have you got any update on that or when we might be seeing you in action?
I'm not too sure yet, Steve. Like you just said, I'm number one now contender, so I've been in the gym since the new year, the last training, working hard and just waiting for things to fall into place, fight dates and venues and the schedule is out of my control. All I can do is remain fit and focused, which is what I'm doing. And now I'm not going to get the call, I'll be ready.
What's it like for someone like you that, you know, you've had all your fights, you know, this is what you've dreamt of, getting to a mandatory contender, and now, you know, you're waiting and waiting. You know, what's it like for you every day in the gym at the moment?
Yeah, it probably was thinking until it's announced, but I know that I've worked hard and I've not been given my shot like that WBO belt, the Intercontinental and the European belt for some years now. And it's been amazing, really, but I've climbed the rankings and number one. And I'm just excited. And the gym's buzzing. There's a lot of fighters in the gym at the moment. Ex-world champions, British champions, new lads coming through. So the gym really buzzing.
What do you think of Maurice Hooker as a fighter? Because, you know, I'll be honest, I was one of the many who didn't give him much chance against Terry Flanagan. And then he had that win against Saucedo. What did you think of him in those two fights?
Yeah, I thought he looked solid against Terry. He didn't do nothing that I thought was exceptional. Maybe Terry had the wrong game plan that night and maybe played into his hands a little bit, but he seems to do things okay. And then if he got off the back of that win with Terry, he'd probably grown in confidence and being a tougher fighter than that. But yeah, he proved me wrong in the second fight, his first defense of the title. He dealt with that pseudo well. Again, I've been watching him, I've been doing my homework, and I've seen many flaws that I can exploit.
I mean, is he one of these fighters, do you think, you said you were a bit more impressive in the second time against Alex Saucedo. Do you think he's one of those types of fighters who have become better for being a world champion?
I'm guessing so. I don't mean into too much, but, I mean, once you've picked up the world title, it's going to give you that confidence. So, it looks like that's the case. But I know myself, once I'm in that position, the better fighter I've been, the more you're going to see a better fighter in me. I always step up to the challenge. I think that's I just can't wait to get it on.
It must look, I mean, I should think the WBO put the mandatory out or something late summer because he's 9 to 12 months will be up then. Would you be looking to have a warm-up fight first where you'd get a good 10 rounds or would you be happy to go straight for it? You know, because you haven't fought since October.
Yeah, honestly, I'm just enjoying being in the gym. If the fight's going to be after summer now, push back to maybe late summer, autumn, then it probably will be that it'd be nice to get some rounds in the ring, but I mean, if it can be made in the coming months, summertime, before summer, and then I'll be ready to step in now.
How well have you settled in Jamie Moore's gym? I mean, I know the results speak for themselves, but was it easier than you thought?
Yeah, it was really good. It's really real at home with Jamie and Knives and the rest of the lads in there, so it's put me in a good place mentally, physically. It's great being in the gym and learning. James, obviously an ex-fighter, so poor like myself, so we share the same thought process and a lot of things, so it's put me on leaps and bounds.
What's it like having people like Carl Frampton in the gym who have been there, seen it and done it? You know, have they given you any advice at all?
Yeah, it's always nice being in the gym. I've been fortunate in my career, being at the side of world champions and people preparing for world title fights, so and you can really see over the years what they put in and how they prepare mentally, physically. Obviously with Carl being in the gym, Rocky being in the gym, it's just been a pleasure this last year. I've seen how they prepare for it. And I'll get some advice and just watch all the fighters that I'm around and never stop learning. And we could pick up little things from every fighter in the gym day to day. It will just keep adding to me again.
I mean, I'm just looking at your record here, you know, although you're 23-0, but you're only 25, aren't you? It seems like I've been around you forever.
Yeah, it's been good, though. It's been an enjoyable journey, and I feel like I'm just getting started. And I'm in a really good position this year. I've had some great fights over the last couple of years. I've won the British, the Intercontinental, the European belts, and I've looked after myself more than anything. I've seen a lot of fighters burn out, injure themselves, get derailed. I mean, I've always stayed in the gym, always looked after my body, so I'm fortunate now that the cream always rises to the top, and I believe I'm there.
When you say you look after your body, is that in between fights? Do you ever weight them? Obviously, you're entitled to go and enjoy yourself for a bit after a fight. You know, you deserve that. But do you have a weight limit or anything? You won't let yourself go above?
Yeah, I'm not one of those fighters that blooms up anyway. I guess I'm like most fighters, you put a bit of weight on, that's normal, but yeah. I don't have a crazy lifestyle, so for me, I'm not probably about going out partying, drinking all the time, between fights, that doesn't really bother me. So, things like injuries and getting derailed and losing focus, and I've maintained that over the years, and I think that's showing now with the position that I'm in.
And when you look back at your wins, there's been some, you know, you look at things like the Joe Hughes win now, how good does that look, given that he's European champion and won it in Italy?
Brilliant, no, I've been in some fights that people have probably forgotten over the last couple of years. George Hughes fight, he gave me, I think it was 12 good rounds in that fight, and George come again, like then he's been on the way, so won the European title, he's challenging again for the British title, so I wish him all the success.
For yourself then, so it's just onwards and upwards now, Jack?
Yeah, I'm planning this being a good year this year, so keep on the ground, been training hard already. I mean, when that form rings, I'll be ready to travel wherever and pick up some more wins.
And one final question. When you're in that gym, and you could be really honest here, do you just have to pretend to like Nigel Travis's jokes and singing?
You don't even have to pretend no more. That's dangerous fact now. Just try and avoid him. When I'm on the pads with him, one or two of them punches might slip off there to there.
Well, you know what? I'm going to get him on in next week and I'm going to get him singing a song for us, I think.
Oh, for God's sake. But yeah, I look forward to it.
Yeah, well, good luck, Steve, with the Nigel Travis song next week. I'm going to leave that one firmly with you.
I'm on it. Don't worry, I'm on it. Nigel will come on and sing a tune for us next week.
Good. Well, if he doesn't, it's going to be you singing.
I will deliver Nigel. I'm on it. I'm on the case.
Now, earlier this week, I was going about my business, getting on with my work, on that daily grind. Not grinder, just my daily grind, you know, just getting on. Then a notification pops up on my Twitter from 9-0 Super Flyweight Sonny Edwards. And he says something to the tune of, when's Dev going to get me on the podcast? When's he going to send cameras up to my gym? When's he going to show me some love? So with that in mind, here's Steve Lillis with the relentless social media fiend and very talented boxer Sonny Edwards. And firstly, he asked him how he felt after his brother Charlie won the world title.
One word sums up really is that of vindication. You know, I think between us, I think we split opinions. You know, some people think now we're overrated and we should get a platform. We do, for whatever reason. Maybe they don't like our personality or our character or our style, whatever. But a lot of people think we are destined, you know, for the, you know, the world title and good things. But after the year he had, you know, I mean, he vacated his British and everything went downhill from there. He had a couple of 8-rounders where one was a rollover opponent, one was an opponent that he stopped on his debut and went 8 rounds. So he had a bit of a frustrating period, fights weren't coming off for him. Then he got the opportunity to fight for the world title, obviously against the kid that beat Barnes. And he obviously took it with both hands and shocked a lot of people. And it was a big moment for our family. Not going to get our mum inside. Obviously, that was, 3 weeks before my son was born. So it was just a great end of the year for both of us, obviously following the back of me beating Farag, which was, you know, I mean, there was a lot of personal fight between me and Farag and just my brother and dad, so that was sort of like putting that to bed, which was another boost. And then obviously the Granados, that was sort of anyone that sort of, you know, followed Frank Warren's fighters, followed Jamie Condon, and saw the war he had with them, had with him and Timo Granados, and I obviously think that I'd be, you know, it's not a lot more comfortably than Condon did. Obviously, Stalin made fights, but it shows how tough it is, you know what I mean? But yeah, it was a great end, and then to see Ireland come through and like a battle of a demon, it was good.
For yourself, though, you know, you've seen him win that world title at flyweight, and last time we spoke, you were very open to what weight you'd want your first world title at. Where would you like that weight to be now? Have you fought any further on it?
Well, I've been a super flyweight for the last pretty much my whole professional career, but I'm not a super flyweight. I'm not super flyweight easy. I spoke to my management more recently, and they're adamant as well that we're going to push on flyweight to the natural weight. You know what I mean? So yeah, ideally at flyweight, but obviously I've got the top 10 ranking in the world with Bobby B.O. And if an opportunity come up against like a Donnie Lewis or someone, for example, it'd be a hard one for me to say no to. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I'm perhaps ready to be called national champion, they're not going to score. But I feel like my talent-wise and my ability-wise and what I've shown so far, I could definitely mix it with a crop of world champions there now at the moment. I mean, I've been opposed by for two separate camps for Art and Dallacane. They wanted me for a third as well over November, December time, but I couldn't because my baby's were reduced, so I didn't get to go over there for the first time in 1 year. But I've shown that I can mix it.
So out of the other world champions, obviously we're going to sidestep your brother Charlie, unless you have a big fallout. WBA champion Dallacchia and the IBF champion Mathelani and the WBO Tanaka. Which of those would you prefer? Someone said, "This, you're happy with the money for it, all three, which one would you pick?
That's a hard one, because I'm really that good friends with me, even though they've made fun of Charlie or something, or like maybe down the line. I spent 2 weeks with him in Ukraine, the first one went out there, and Dallacchia was a sparring partner for us, so and, like, I've got a lot of respect for him as well. But that said, I probably think that Tanaka is the pick of the bunch, and I think he's the sort of, you know, the sort of danger man, really. It'd be a hard one, maybe Moritz is a bit older, you know, I think, but he's a good friend of mine, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. I've been in the company of three of the four world champions, you know what I mean, and I've been in the two of them.
I tell you what, they're not bad fighters all four, are they?
No, of course they're not. I think Dallacchia and Tanaka just have a lot more left in the tank, because Murray is coming to the end of his career. I mean, he had a fantastic career where, you know, beating Casemiro, beating Tete, he had a brilliant career, you know what I mean? And I'm so glad when I met up with him in Ukraine, he was the IBO world champion, but he vacated that. Even though some South Africans see that as a world champion, he's like, no, he's not recognised as a world title, and he's been on for a world title, and he got this shot, and then he won against Mohamed Wazir. So, all the best to him.
Sonny, when you suffered that injury when you went down in the second round against Junior Granados, were you aware of it for the rest of the fight?
Well, yeah, when I got up and I put my right leg on top of my right leg,
Fantastic for speaking to us, Sonny, and fingers crossed we're going to get an announcement very soon on your next title defence.
Yeah, hopefully it should be very soon.
A couple weeks ago, Frank Warren announced a new signing which got a few tongues wagging online. 8-0 middleweight Denzel Bentley has been smashing his way through the small hall scenes with 7 knockouts to his name so far. Steve Lillis spoke to the new Bentley, who's parked up in Warren's stable.
Denzel, thanks for joining us for the first time on the Boxing Podcast. For the people who don't know a lot about you, you're a bit of a wrecking machine, aren't you, when we look at your record? 8 fights, 8 wins, 7 knockouts. Most of them go early.
Yeah. I just tried to get in there and just do what I meant to do. I've had one fight up in the distance. That fight, I just wanted to box a little bit at night. Because I knew that was the hot stop, so I didn't want to just go in there and trying to build myself up, so I thought I just boxed. But yeah, my record shows that I'm a big puncher. I like to think I can punch a little bit, but I always like to think that I can box.
How easy is it for you to get carried away with your power? I mean, 5 of your wins have come in the first round.
I don't really get carried away with it because as an amateur, I didn't stop anyone.
Really?
Yeah, I stopped about 3 times and I was 75. So when I came into the game, I didn't come in as a puncher, I came in as a boxer, as a pro. So I thought all my fights were going distance. All of a sudden, started tagging them, catch people with the right shots, and it was falling over.
So where did the power come from then? Was it what Martin Bowers and the gang at the Peacock taught you?
Yeah, maybe it's the training that I'm getting, because you know the training from the amateur and the pros look different, the styles look different. With the amateur, it's a lot faster, so it's more like you're just ticky-tapping your punches and stuff. And like with the pros, you get to sit a little more, you're looking at your work, and landing the shots better, and you get to think about your work. So I think the change in the sport and from the amateurs to the pros kind of probably helped me, and the training, but a lot of strength and conditioning and stuff like that.
You've taken your chance as well. Like when you fought Serge and Bomo, you took that fight at 3 hours' notice, just I dare say, maybe to get some money for Christmas. I don't know, but that was a gamble, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a gamble. But I was already scheduled to fight 2 weeks after that on the Peacock tennis show that do the end. So I was already in shape, I was already fit. When Martin said you could fight, I'm just like, automatically, I was like, yeah, you're fighting, isn't it? That's what I'm training for. And then, so yeah, I took a gamble. It paid off in the end because everyone got to see me at a stage and Frank got to see me and stuff. So it looked good. He probably wanted to sign me after that, so it was good.
What's it going to be like for you on that Friday night in early March, March 8, when you're boxing at the Royal Albert Hall? All the great fighters have performed there. You know, Mike McCullum, a great middleweight, was there when he beat Michael Watson.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be crazy. I've been looking at the venue, I've just been tapping it on a Google, like, Royal Albert Hall, just to look at the venue over and over again, that hard over it. Can't wait to box there. It's going to be an amazing experience. I just hope there's more shows there.
What are you looking to do yourself this year? Because, you know, you have only had 8 professional fights, only 17 amateur fights. So I know Martin Bowers isn't going to let you off the leash until they feel they're ready. What do you want to achieve this year?
This year, I want to achieve titles and more exposure.
I'll try to refrain on all the other ways to get her more exposure. But the next goal is to get some sort of titles by the end of this year. Some sort of domestic titles, small titles by the end of this year. I want to be in title contention very soon. That's my goal.
There's one fight on the bill you might have an eye on. I know you'll be cheering on your friend Daniel Dubois, who you train with, but the British middleweight title fight between Liam Williams and Joe Mullender. What's your take on that fight?
I think Liam Williams should win. Joe Mullender's a tough guy. He's a tough guy. He's going to keep coming and keep coming, but I think Liam Williams is just the level above him. And I don't think it'd be an easy night, but he would win every round convincingly in a tough fight. That's my opinion. I think it's a good fight. I'll be watching closely. That's my weight division, of course, but like, you never know what can happen in the future. I can come across any one of them in the future. So it's just one of the things I'll be looking at. But I think Liam Williams should win.
You know, you make that. You live in Battersea. You have to journey across London every day to the gym at the Peacock. Do you work as well, or can you afford to box full time?
Yeah, no, I'm full time now. I'm not working anymore at the moment. But yeah, making that journey there, I'm used to it now, so it's not that long to me. But it's a good gym. It's a nice gym. You go there, everyone's like lively, everyone's nice, everyone's just getting on with their work. So it's just, like, even going there, like you want to wake up and go there in the morning because you know it's a good vibe in the gym. Sometimes you go to gyms and it's a bit quiet and everyone's a bit like, you know, like in some sort of mood because I don't know, maybe they're cutting weight and stuff and it's just like, okay, we're here, like it's a bit boring. But in the gym, we're at people laugh with everyone, even people that's not in our camp, we laugh with people in the gym. Just get on with our work, everyone's working hard, so it kind of gives you a bit of life, motivates you to do what you're doing. So it's good.
And before we let you go, we're going to get one more prediction off you. James DeGale against Chris Eubank Jr. this weekend.
That's a good fight. I think Eubank is catching DeGale right now. I think DeGale is on a decline. I feel like if James DeGale shows up like the way he showed up against Shrek at the Copper Box, I think Eubank beats him all day. But if he doesn't, he's a far better boxer and he should ping him. But for some reason, I've got Eubank winning that fight.
So, Steve, what do you know about this kid?
He can whack, believe me. I saw him a couple of fights ago when he fought on the Nordhoff Robbins dinner show. Yes. And he's got some serious power. It's amazing that he wasn't, I think he was telling me that he only had 3 stoppages in his amateur career, but 5 first round wins as a pro. And he's sort of like the danger man of the division to watch out for, I believe. And also he's from Battersea, which there's no better background to have. That's my manor when I used to live in London. And there was a very good middleweight from Battersea a few years ago, you may remember, Howard Eastman, who won British, European, Commonwealth titles, had 2 world title fights, lost to William Joppy, I think, for a WBA title. And then he was world beaten by Bernard Hopkins. And that was for that saying, I'm going to say it, that I hate, all of the marbles. Yeah, the IBF, the WBA, the WBC, WBO belt. Eastman was a bit of a strange character, a maverick. But certainly one of those Britons unlucky to not win a world title. Ran into a very good Bernard Hopkins and very unlucky against Joppy. So they're the footsteps that Denzel Bentley is following in. And it's a career I'm really going to watch because this kid can whack. And he's a good addition to the Albert Hall bill in March.
Yeah, he's fighting on the Albert Hall bill 8th of March. It's topped by Daniel Dubois and Anthony Yard, both in big fights. And tell me about Bentley. You know, you said you saw him at the on the charity show, so I was there as well. And wasn't there a story where he only got like 2 hours notice or something like that, and still went in there and then just knocked the guy out? He like sort of saved the show a bit, didn't he?
That's right. Yeah, he Sergio Mombo, was it the guy's name? He knocked out. What happened was a fight fell through the day before. Mervyn Turner, Frank's matchmaker, said, "Does Denzel want to fight tomorrow night?" Yeah, he'll fight. I'll get back to you if it's on. They never heard, so don't worry, we don't need him, was the next call. So he went into the gym that day, trained like a lunatic. You know, went home to Battersea, got the tube back to Battersea or to Waterloo, the train to Clapham Junction, got a bus down to Nine Elms to his home near Battersea Park. And he got indoors, he had a big feast of food, and then a phone call called, "Do you want a box tonight? The fight's back on."
But he said yes, and he did it, and he went and got the knockout. So well done, great attitude.
Yeah, he's a good fighter, you know, and he's been in that Peacock gym. He keeps himself to himself in that gym, and he's got on with it, and the wins have come. And the guy who did take him the distance, Christian Hosking Gomez, has got a poor record, but it rarely gets stopped. So, look, I'm really looking forward to following Denzel's career and a good signing for Frank Warren.
He trains with Martin Bowers and Daniel Dubois. So I've seen him before. I've seen him in the gym without sort of knowing who he is. It was only later I was like, oh, okay. So he's actually like, you know, he's gonna go somewhere, this guy. So he trains with Dubois, and I've always just seen him being able to keep up with Dubois and all the drills, all the ridiculous stuff that Martin Bowers has him doing down there to get them into shape. He's always keeping up. You never really see him get tired. So I'm looking forward to seeing this guy too. I remember actually seeing him spar Sam McNess a couple of years ago, and then I was like, oh, okay, he's doing well here. So he's got something about him, Denzel Bentley.
Yeah, and he has. And as I say, if you bank people over, people will come and watch you. You don't have to be a guy that trash talks. People come and watch the knockout artists. You get him and Dubois at that gym banging people over. It's like a double act, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he made a prediction about Eubank versus De Gale this weekend. There's a few predictions on today's show. Steve, where's your head at with James De Gale versus Chris Eubank?
I'm with a lot of people on this, Dev. It depends what is left of James De Gale. I don't think he's been the same since that brutal war with Badou Jack back in 2017, just over 2 years ago when they drew. And I don't think that James anything like the man that beat George Groves early in his career, the man that beat Andre Durrell to win the title. I think we've seen the best of him. You know, it's just what is left of him. Is that enough to beat Chris Eubank? I think if he keeps it long, I think he could still win the fight and outbox Eubank and frustrate him and take a clear points decision. But if there isn't anything left, then this is the night Eubank does become somebody.
Yeah, it's that seems to be the general consensus with this. It's, I mean, in terms of professional and amateur accomplishments, they are leagues apart. You know, James De Gale, Olympic gold medalist, but it's just about has Eubank caught him at the right time. And it feels like every time Eubank heads into a big fight, people are like, "This is it. He's going to do it. This is his star-making performance. He's going to go and beat Billy Joe Saunders, and then he's going to go on and win a world title. Or he's going to go and beat George Groves because George Groves is on his way out. He's going to go and beat James De Gale because he's going to get him at the right time." But then it actually doesn't happen. So what do you think? Is it going to happen this time?
That is a fantastic point you've made there, Dev. I'm going to give you this pat on the back next year. Here, I'm whacking you on the back now. That is the Thanks. Point of the show. And you know what? You have convinced me to tip James De Gale. That little 30 seconds of gold dust from you, you sprinkled some magic on that this podcast today with that, and I'm serious there. And that has convinced me to tip James De Gale to keep it long and win the fight on points.
It's funny you say that because I'm actually tipping Eubank. So,
you persuaded me to change my mind with your little 30-second outburst there. And now you're going to tip Eubank. That's fair enough, mate. But that's a great point you made, by the way.
I can't persuade myself because I think, you know, Groves had enough kind of pop to keep Eubank off of him, and I think there was a knockdown in there as well. It wasn't given, but he was hurting him at times, Eubank. It wasn't that obvious, but he knocked him down as well. There was enough to keep him off. De Gale's hurtful shots seem to be those ones, that those sort of looping ones that come from a distance, and I don't think Eubank's going to give him the distance. I think he's got enough to keep him off. So I fancy Eubank to outwork him, maybe stop him late.
Yeah, I'm just going to go De Gale points. And that's also might be my hut. Not just you convincing me there, even though you've gone the other way. And that makes no sense at all to people I know that are listening. But I'm gonna go with hearts with De Gale as well. So I'm going for Chunky. Good luck, Chunky.
You're with Chunky. I reckon Eubank. Either way, it should be a good fight. Steve, I couldn't sleep last night. Every time it felt like I was about to drift off, this thought just kept popping up in my head, and I kept asking myself, that's Steve Lillis. I wonder what he's got on his mind this week. I wonder what he's ranting about. I wonder what he's raving about. So, Steve, tell me my sleepless night was not in vain. What you talking about, Lillis?
Well, Dev, what I'm going to rant about is how anyone can have the front to have a pop at Anthony Crolla for gulling to get in the ring with Vasyl Lomachenko. You know, what planet are they on? What does Crolla do? Say no, I'm not having this chance because I don't deserve it. Absolute madness that people are slaughtering him. And what, you know, I don't think he can win the fight whatsoever, Dev. I'm not going to say that, but there, it just shows that this lightweight division, wow, we've got Vasyl Lomachenko, WBA and WBO champion. We've got the IBF champion, you know, Richard Commey, who's hardly a paid-up member of Murderer's Row, by the way. And we've got the WBC champion, Mikey Garcia, who's ignoring lightweight and jumping two weights to go and fight Errol Spence at welterweight. So, you know, what does Crawler do when he gets this chance? What does Lomachenko do? It just shows that the division isn't stacked in talent. I'm telling you that. Because, you know, you've got youngsters like Teofimo Lopez and Devin Haney. There's no way they're ready for Lomachenko yet. You know, take the rest away. Maybe Luke Campbell, maybe Rancis Barthelme. You know, Crawler is as deserving as anybody of his chance. Whatever chance you think he's got, don't blame him. Blame the system that makes him number one.
That's it, Steve. I think, what you said at the end there is perfectly bang on. Don't blame him. Blame the system. However, I would just point out, I think that there seems to be a kind of false narrative out there every time. When a Brit ends up in a fight that it's deemed that they've got no hope in. So let's look at Rocky Fielding against Canelo. You look at Crawler against Lomachenko. There seems to be this thing out there that, oh my God, how can you slag off Crawler? He's going to make, you know, a lot of money, and he's, what's he supposed to do? Say no to the fight. I don't think anyone's actually saying that. I think they're just having a go at why is the fight happening. They're not having a go at the actual fighter taking the chance. It's more, do we really have to watch it? Do you know what I mean? Like Lomachenko versus Crawler, we know who's going to win. Canelo versus Fielding, we knew who was going to win that fight. So it's not directing the ire at the fighter, it's more at the situation, blaming the system, as you said, Steve.
That's it. You know, the WBA have made him number one, and you know, Lomachenko wants all four titles. He's not going to give up that belt. You know, so he's got to fight Anthony Crawler. And if you go back a few months on the podcast, we had Bob Arum on, and he wasn't enamoured with the fight. You know, he's number one. The fight's been made, but don't dig out Anthony Crawler over this. You know, I'm pleased he's getting a career-ending payday, which would be quite handsome. And, that you know, he's fighting at one of the best arenas in the world in Los Angeles.
It's a career-ending payday. Let's hope it's not a career-ending beatdown, though, Steve Lillis. I just hope we don't see any brave corners in there. I can't see him doing a lot in that fight. But, you know, wish him well, of course. He's a Brit. You've got to back him. I can only see one winner, though. Well, another week, another cracker of a show. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, at The Boxing Pod. I'm seeing more and more five-star reviews coming through now, which is great news. So thanks to everyone for sending them. Keep them coming. Tell a friend to keep their ears open. Let us into your lives. Let us into your hearts. Steve, any closing comments?
Get well soon to myself. That's the closing comments.
No, I should have said that. Steve, get well soon. Listeners, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a fully fit Steve Lillis.